Welcome to Econ on Mics, where we dive into the world of research with insightful conversations featuring six remarkable women economists from Asia, Africa, and Latin America. Proudly presented by the International Economic Association's Women in Leadership and Economics Initiative in collaboration with Women in Econ and Policy. Stay tuned as we uncover fresh perspectives and explore the global economic landscape.
Hello, I am Santiago de la Cadena, Human Development Economist at the World Bank in the Latin America and the Caribbean region. I am honored to introduce Professor Adriana Camacho, one of the most influential economists and researchers in Colombia. Professor Camacho has a PhD in economics from Brown University. She's also an associate professor of the economics department at the Universidad de los Andes in Bogotá, Colombia. But next week, she will be starting a new position as senior advisor of the Direction of Development Contributions and Impact Evaluation at CAF. Her main areas of expertise are impact evaluation, social programs, poverty, health, and education. Professor Camacho has also served for the Colombian government as director of monitoring and evaluation of public policies at the Department of National Planning. And for the last 4 years, she has been part of the Poverty Experts Commission for the Department of Statistics in Colombia. Her research has been published in many important international journals, including the American Economic Review, the Lancet, the Journal of Health Economics, the American Economic Journal, the World Bank Economic Review, among others. She was nominated in 2023 to be in the top 30 most influential economists in Colombia by Forbes. And she has also been nominated to be in the 10 most cited academics in Colombia by La Republica in 2022 and 2024. Personally, I have had the honor to work with her both from an academic perspective at Los Andes University as her PhD student, and also professionally in the World Bank. Professor Camacho, welcome. It's an honor to be here with you today discussing your work.
Well, Santiago, thanks so much for this nice introduction. I'm honored to be here to be having this conversation with you.
I think we're going to have a great podcast. So today we will be discussing one of Professor Camacho's most recent papers, produced together with Professor Catherine Rodriguez, called Happily Ever After, Domestic Violence in Periods of Scarcity. This paper presents innovative evidence of the impacts of cash transfer on domestic violence, an area where evidence is still scarce and results are mixed, but with extremely important and substantive and policy implications internationally. He uses the case of the Colombian flagship cash transfer program, Familias en Acción, to present robust evidence that cash transfers do have a role to play on reducing domestic violence. But she also challenges some of the most traditional conclusions on the role of cash transfers in gender inequality and women empowerment. For me, this is a very innovative and important paper. So without further ado, Professor Camacho, to begin, can you tell listeners about the Colombian cash transfer program, Familias en Acción, and give them some context about the process and patterns of payments to beneficiaries?
Sure, Santiago. Well, the program, the Colombian CCT, it's called Familias en Acción, as you have mentioned, and it started in year 2001. It was just after we had a big recession in 1999 in Colombia, and it was inspired by the Mexican program Progresa. The Familias en Acción has three main objectives, similar to many other CCTs that have been in place in different countries in the region. And it's precisely the reduction of poverty and inequality and strengthening health and nutrition for children in the households. Precisely nutrition and health for children below the age of 7 and promoting school attendance for children between 7 and 18. The program expanded through the territory through the last 22 years, and it has served nearly 2.4 million families throughout the country. But this year, the government decided to grant a different social program assistance called Renta Básica, which it has different targeting mechanisms and different conditionalities. They would start implementing it through, but it's in the process of transition. The Familias en Acción is one of the largest programs that we have in the country in terms of the coverage. As I mentioned, it covers approximately 1/4 of the population. And the expansion went through the 2001 and 2006, and it was targeting mostly two-thirds of the municipalities, but these municipalities, which is the smallest unit that we have geographically in the country, were mainly rural and they had less than 100,000 inhabitants. In terms of infrastructure, for the program to be operating, it had to have a bank in order to do the payments or facilitate the payments, health and school facilities to deliver the services that the program had as a conditionality. The program gives two types of incentives. One, the health promotion for, as I mentioned, for children below seven. We used 2007 to measure this amount in dollars. So at that time, household that had a children below the age of seven was receiving $22 per month. And to receive the payment, the household needed to take the child to growth and development medical checkups. And the second incentive corresponds to children in primary or secondary school. For primary schools, the incentive is smaller, it's $6.6 per month. And for children in secondary, it's $13.3. The differences, of course, correspond to the coverage that we have in these two different levels of education. And to attain the transfer, the children needed to attend a minimum of 80% of the classes during the academic year. So just to understand, let's say, how much of this incentive corresponds to the income of these households. If you take, for example, a family who has a child below the age of seven, for example, five, and one that is 13 and is in secondary, this family would be receiving for these two kids $35 per month. And this amounts roughly to one-fifth of the Colombian minimum wage, which is the median salary in the country. Is a sizable amount of money, or at least important in terms of the income of these families, which are in extreme poverty.
As you mentioned, this is a very important program in Colombia. It has been for a long time with a very large coverage. But I was wondering, why did you choose this program to study the effect of cash transfer on domestic violence? How does this differ from other programs that have been used, for example, to assess the impacts of microcredit or access to banking systems?
Okay, I think there are at least three main reasons. One of them is one that I just mentioned, which is this program covers around 20 to 25% of the population in Colombia. So it's really, you're giving income to a sizable amount of families. These families are in extreme poverty conditions. So these households might have more liquidity constraints than other households. And if one thinks that one of the conditions that could trigger domestic violence is the use or the lack of resources within the family, the program provides a lab, let's call it a lab, to test this hypothesis. Let me explain this a little bit better because this enters into the details of economists or econometrics, which is the program could be used as a lab experiment because the transfers are assigned every 2 months. But we use different timing of the transfers, let's say moments of positive or negative surprises that correspond to moments where the family was not expecting to receive a transfer. Therefore, it ends up being like a shock of income, like an external source of income that they were not expecting. And this is called, from economists, as shocks or exogenous shocks that could be evaluated. Why is it important to have exogenous shocks? Because as you were comparing, why would we not be using, let's say, money that you're getting from a microcredit or from the bank? This is very different because the money from a credit or bank, you are deciding to receive the money. If once you are deciding something, this decision could correspond to some of other of your characteristics, for example, having a work in the labor force, a formal job, and this might give you more a higher probability of getting that credit. So there are some conditions of the individual or of the household that could grant him or her this amount of money. In the case of the program of Familias en Acción, given that we are using positive and negative surprises, this is completely a shock or exogenous, or as you can tell, if you were putting a treatment in the lab, that some households are receiving this positive income shock or negative income shock. And that's how we are arguing that we are finding a causal effect or a unique effect only from an income shock that a household receives.
So, Professor, going to the core of the paper, according to your findings, what was the impact of the conditional cash transfer Familias en Acción on domestic violence in Colombia?
Well, The changes in income that I just mentioned uses variation in the time and the space of the payments of this conditional cash transfer program. And we use a panel, a municipal panel of 3 years long of monthly payments and reports of domestic violence. We find that the rate of domestic violence decreases by 6% in the months when the transfer was received. However, this effect is only transitory and varies according to the household expectation of when the transfer will be received. So adverse shocks, for example, when the families do not receive the expected transfer, incentivizes or it makes stronger economic scarcity, and the domestic violence rates in these months can increase. On the contrary, if you have a positive shock that occurs when families receive an unexpected transfer, it only has a marginal reduction in domestic violence. The channel that we think that appears to be explaining these results, it's the budget constraint alleviation.
Actually, what you just said about the timing of the transfer, it seems very important in your paper when I read it. You found like there are differences between the timing on unexpected transfer versus receiving expected ones impacts domestic violence. Could you please elaborate a little bit more on the timing and how important it is to receive cash transfer on time versus off time?
Well, if you receive the cash transfer whenever it is supposed to be received, which is every 2 months, then the household will decide how much. And if you have a long period of time, as we have, households get used to how to, let's say, do smoothing their consumption over time and knowing when is the transfer going to be received. So in general, household needs to receive every 2 months a transfer. If the transfer is not received because maybe you're not complying with conditionalities or the school didn't send restrict the conditionality criteria for the government to send the transfers, or there's a delay or whatever, it's happening and you move to the next month or you move to the month, a consequent month, that's what we are calling by negative shock. So a negative shock is if you are receiving the next transfer more than 2 months later, and a positive shock is when you are receiving a transfer in the next month after the first transfer was received. So these are the ways that you could identify, given that it's not expected. When it's expected, you would say that all the conditions within the household are not going to vary, right? Not even domestic violence, not even consumption, not going to doctor or school. But if you are getting additional shocks, behaviors might be changing because this is something that is not expected.
Another aspect of the paper that I thought that was very interesting is the duration of the impact. You found an impact on reducing domestic violence due to this cash transfer, but this impact is not long-lasting. It actually disappeared. Can you explain a little bit more about how long seemed to last the impact of cash transfer on domestic violence according to your research?
Maybe it's not that it disappears, but the households get used to the transfer. So it's not that they adapt to that. So the domestic violence would not see a difference if they are receiving the transfer they are used to receive. But if they are receiving extra income or a reduction in the income they are receiving, there's where you see the changes in domestic violence appearing.
I think what you just explained, I think it's key for policy makers worldwide, because usually cash transfers are designed only with immediate effects on poverty or, but not necessarily with the gender lens or the externalities in mind. I think you mentioned before, but I wanted to go a little bit deeper on the channels that you found through which cash transfers seem to have an impact. You mentioned scarcity seems to be a very important channel, but did you find data to support any other channels are important towards this purpose?
Well, we did a lot of work trying to find channels. And what we found is that we find that it's scarcity because we are seeing an increase in domestic violence, and we can explain it by different ways. So the first way that we try to explain is if the expenditures are changing. So we see that when households are having a positive income shock, they are increasing the amount of money they are spending on household consumption and precisely on food consumption. So this is showing us that they might have had a liquidity constraint, and the transfer is, let's say, releasing that constraint a little bit. In addition to those channels, we tried to look at female empowerment. For example, we were saying, well, if the mother in the household or the female, the head in the household, is receiving the money, this is empowering her. There's a lot of literature talking about the power that women and men have in the household is related precisely to the amount of money that they are receiving in terms of income. So the transfer is increasing the income of the female. And we wanted to know if that was the case. And we use very nice data that we find from the first Colombian survey that was done to measure the impacts of this program, which asks whether the decisions are taken by females, by males, or by both in the household. And what we find precisely and very interesting is that males are entering into deciding. Once they are a part of the program, they enter to make more decisions about sending the kids to school and taking them to the doctor. So initially we thought, no, this is not empowering. This is the opposite of empowerment. But I don't know where this could be read as that. This might be read as they are thinking that it's important to get the funds, but in addition, they might be thinking that these are two important things to invest in your kids. Given that the program appeared and gave them information about the importance of investment in human capital, they are being involved in this decision. So men are involved in the decision more than they were before they were receiving the transfers. So this is not showing evidence of empowerment per se. This is showing more collective decisions within the household, I think. There is no change in marital status, for example. You would think that if you receive more money, you can make decisions about changing your marital status, and this is not the case. You are not seeing effects on labor participation. The income, the extra income could be reducing labor participation. We don't know if in the intensive margin, they are reducing the number of hours that they are working, but not in participation per se. You are not seeing changes in social networks or more social networks for these beneficiary mothers. So that's why we went through a range of mechanisms with, let's say, with good data sets, and we are finding that the effect comes from precisely spending more when the transfer is coming. So that's why we call it, this is a mechanism of scarcity, and the transfer is reducing this problem within the households, and in a way of an externality is reducing as well domestic violence.
What you're saying, I found it very interesting, because it's usual when we work in cash transfer, it's usual that women are targeted to receive cash transfer because it's supposed to have a very important effects on women empowerment. So based on your results, do you think providing or targeting women to receive cash transfer as a mechanism to improve empowerment, it's a really good approach from the policy side of things?
Well, there are studies that show that if you give the transfer to females or males, you're going to have similar effects. They're not done precisely for Colombia, but there's evidence of that. You might see these changes in behaviors as we are identifying, which is having all the household deciding for things that are important. They are not deciding on buying clothes, but they are deciding or changing all the types of spendings, but they are deciding on these two things that are important. So this is a positive effect of bringing the cash transfer that way. In fact, I wanted to mention an additional effect that we find, and is precisely that the effect of domestic violence is going through the spouse or female in the household. So if we look at who is saying that they had domestic violence, the cases are coming through females in the household. They are not coming through younger kids or older members in the household. So they are coming precisely from the person who is receiving the money. So this could go in line with some of the evidence that there's in the literature as well of man backlash, which is identifying that if men don't want to lose or release power within the household, they might be threatening women with domestic violence. But this is not a question that we can go in detail in the paper. So this is just some kind of evidence that the transfer is changing the domestic violence within the couple, let's say.
So I wanted to move on, Professor, to the impact of this paper on policymaking. So I wanted to ask you, understanding that this effect that you found of cash transfer on domestic violence is unintended externality, what is the policy value of knowing cash transfer actually impacts domestic violence?
Okay. Well, it is evident that the reduction in domestic violence brought by this program, by the CCT, is a positive and unintended externality, as you were just mentioning, but still it's also temporary, and in periods in which the transfer are not received, domestic violence might revert, or it could even escalate if there are long periods of not receiving an income that you were used to receive. And I want to connect this with another author, it's called Mulay Nathan and Shafir. They have paper and even a book, which I recommend a lot, and which is called Scarcity. And what they study is that the thought process that drives decision making is impaired by scarcity. So scarcity reduces the bandwidth and the executive control, increases the probability of violence, maybe an emergence of this condition. So I think it's very important to involve within the process of making programs of assistance within the social policy agenda to understand that releasing these problems of the scarcity and understanding that the extreme poor could be making other decisions or could have different behaviors in periods where they have less scarcity versus or more money given from subsidies or from income or from having a ways to offer them jobs. It might be a very important condition to take into account into the policy considerations. And this is very connected to what we, let's say, suffered through the pandemic, right? The pandemic and the COVID-19 lockdown, several people in their households, their families, there were loss of jobs related to the pandemic. There were reductions in the hours spent at work because there were other activities that need to be done at home, childcare or just household care. This might be important for governments to be able to address these emergencies and be able to give income and support households because problems of scarcity might reduce also their way to and their behaviors within households related, for example, to domestic violence in this case.
I wanted to kind of divide the policy side of this discussion into two areas. First is, according to your paper, what the recommendations that you think policymaker has to take into account when deciding policies to reduce domestic violence. I know from my experience at the World Bank that, for example, Chile and Colombia have working very hard in kind of reducing domestic violence or gender-based violence. So what can we learn, what can policymakers learn from your paper towards that objective?
Well, I think that even though the paper is studying domestic violence, I think this is not a policy targeting domestic violence. So I think the first thing to know is that you need to have specific programs for those purposes. I think that types of programs that give female empowerment are much more important for reducing domestic violence. For example, giving information to females in order for them to know how to get access to help or to call or to go to police or whatever. These are other types of programs that exist. There are other programs that make social networks more stronger and that would help them understand what is normal and not normal in terms of domestic violence. Maybe many females are normalizing this condition, for example. So just going through your question, I think that this condition of cash transfer, it's to improve the human capital investments within the household, which are education and health, reduce poverty through reduction of poverty, that is giving an income to alleviate poverty. We are having an external effect over domestic violence, but I don't think that, and I don't know whether there exists a particular policy or program which gives income to reduce domestic violence, which I don't think is the case. But I think this opens our eyes in terms of there's an important problem. Households which have constraints or are in extreme poverty, they might be suffering more from this type of problems of domestic violence.
Fully agreeing with you, and changing to the other part of the paper about the cash transfer itself. You mentioned earlier that it's usual nowadays that governments, even cities, are going through a more guaranteed minimum income or basic income schemes in social assistance. So what can we learn from your research on how to design or how to think about cash transfers in Latin America or in the global South?
Well, I think that this type of cash transfer, particularly the CCT, which is very similar to the one that started in Progresa and which has been for a long time in this country, more than 20 years, they have been evaluated in terms of several outcomes. So they have been shown to be effective in precisely in rural areas for improving the health conditions of children. They have been proven to change the education criteria, for example, a reduction of dropouts, a increased graduation of the beneficiaries, entrance into higher education. I have a baby, which is looking at that. Other aspects like crime could be affected also by the transfers in addition to pregnancies, for example, to changes in fertility decisions within the mothers of the households or within the teenagers within the household. So teenage pregnancies can be changing through this program. So there are many ways in which this program has been evaluated and mostly has been found to have a positive effect on several outcomes and several dimensions. But I think it's important also to take into account something that is doing the current government. When you are moving from a type of social program that has been proven to work in a specific way and has certain conditionalities and has certain graduation conditions, it's very risky, let's say, to move into another type of program, similar, for example, to the basic income schemes, where you don't know how are the behaviors all going to change. I think I suggest that governments do pilots of these programs in order to scale them up, because you might see different behaviors. Maybe if you don't have the conditionality of going to the doctor or going to school, if you live very far away, you're just going to be expecting the transfer and you're not going to do anything for improving your human capital within the household. And in that case, you're never going to go out of poverty. You're just going to have a transfer that goes through all the time. If you don't have conditionalities, for example, on trying to give some training for getting a new job, or if the program starts being completely assistential instead of trying to move forward some developing conditions that are needed to get out of poverty, then you might get very unintended consequences of this implementation of programs. You never know what would happen, for example, with the labor markets. You don't know if this would incentivize or not incentivize people to go to get new jobs, to work more, to work less, if the transfer is going to give them resources in order to get transportation and to move to cities to get new jobs. You never know. So my recommendation as an academic is try to measure and try to understand very well the intended and unintended consequences of policies in order to scale them up.
I think your insights are right on spot for what policymakers need. Before making a little bit of my conclusions, as we're reaching the end of the podcast, I wanted to just open the space to see if there's any other striking findings or discoveries from your paper that you would like us to know or to highlight.
Well, I think we have talked about several of them, but just to highlight two. The first one is that we are seeing once a household is receiving a positive shock in income, domestic violence reduced, and particularly domestic violence that is being affected or changed is the spouses, and not the minors or not the elderly. So it's directly related to the relationship between the couple. And this is where the money is coming to. So the recipient of the money is the female within the household, say the mother, or it could be the head of the household, but it's the female within the household. The second is we are mostly certain that the channel that we're understanding is that the cash transfer is reducing scarcity. And the evidence of this is that spendings are increasing when the household is receiving an income shock. And the last one that I want to mention, and it's very interesting to me and was striking, I was expecting the opposite, is the empowerment channel, which is we were expecting that when the female was receiving more money to take the kids to the doctor appointments or to development controls and to go to school more, she was going to be deciding more on these conditions precisely. And what we see is that men are getting into this decision as well. Men are deciding more on these two conditions, and this is guaranteeing, if both of them are aligned in this decision, this is guaranteeing more that the money will be received by the household. So I think these are three, let's say, big findings.
So, Professor, I know people are also, other researchers are maybe thinking in doing similar studies using similar methods that you used. So I wanted to ask, in terms of studying topics like domestic violence, using economic analysis and data, are there any limitations or challenges you faced, or what can researchers interested in this topic learn from your experience?
Well, I think this is a very interesting question. I think there are several limitations because it's very difficult to ask people or to get accurate data of domestic violence. This is a variable with lots of measurement errors, with misreports. So the data that we are using right now for this study is the forensic data collected, given the cases that they receive for domestic violence. So in fact, we are not seeing all the cases of domestic violence. And this is very important to take into account that this is a very difficult condition to capture in survey data. So an additional problem could be if you're looking at this data at the individual level, it's very difficult to get from two sources the same information within this period, with this timing that we are having. We are using payments every 2 months, and we have a 3-year panel of payments by municipality. So our study is looking at how many cases of domestic violence are within the municipality and how are the payments assigned within the municipality. So this is not data that we are able to use or to aggregate, to use at the individual level, and we need to aggregate in order to have the timing of the payments or to exploit the timing of the payment. So I think these are the two challenges that we have in terms of data for this type of analysis.
Just, I know listeners may be interested in understanding more about the link between cash transfers and domestic violence. So I was wondering if you have any recommendations for further readings on this topic, a book that you wanted to recommend.
Well, just going a little bit out of the economic literature, very technical, I recommend really this book from Sandel Mulenathan about scarcity, which has lots of experiments on how you could change your behaviors when in moments where you have money or where you don't have money. Or it could even be lack of anything, it could be lack of time. You don't think well and you behave differently when you have lack of anything. So it's a very interesting book to read. And I have an additional suggestion. When I read a little bit the questions that we were going to talk about, I asked my co-author, Catherine. She reads a lot. And she recommended a book that she read from a Nobel Prize in 2022. She's Annie Ernaux, and it's called Shame. It's a very short book talking about the problems of domestic violence. So she's sharing that with you.
Thank you very much for the recommendation. Just, well, for me, it has been extremely interesting and important to learn about your research. As I said at the beginning, I am part of the World Bank. It's my role to advise countries in Latin America. So I just wanted to, as a closure, maybe have three main takeaways that I take from this conversation with you. First, as you said, is that we need to understand more about the externalities of cash transfers. You presented one of them, but I see many dimensions in which research already tells something or that we need to understand a little bit more. As I said, as governments are going through changes and going to guaranteed minimum income or basic incomes, I think ensuring a gender lens in all of those is very urgent. The second is, I think your paper, for me, I found it inviting to reconsider some of the assumptions that we traditionally have about cash transfer. For instance, that implication of always targeting women to receiving cash transfer, which is something that has been traditionally done. I think it's time to think a little bit more about that and see how can improve that. And finally, I also find this paper inviting for understanding how cash transfer should be integrated with other services. Domestic violence is not really going to be solved through cash transfer necessarily. So right now, the discussions on care, the care systems and cash transfer, I think it's something that for Latin America, as World Bank, we are seeing that it's very important. So Professor Camacho, thank you very much for your time. I hope the listeners found your research as impactful and interesting as me. And also congratulations on your new role in CAF. And the best of luck to you in this new challenge.
Yes, I want to say one additional sentence, let's say. I would say that you could broaden the conclusion of this paper by saying that poverty, inequality, and the lack of income may cause different forms of violence, because we know that these are the causes of crime. Let's say we related a lot that poverty, inequality can cause crime outside the household, let's say, and streets, but it's also causing another type of crime, which is domestic violence. And I think this is a very important way to see the impact that poverty can have outside and inside the household or the family.
Thank you for joining us. A special thanks to our brilliant speakers and interviewers for their valuable contributions. Share your favorite moments using the hashtag #AmplifyingVoices and stay tuned for more impactful discussions.